Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me today. Thanks for being part of my day. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com, where you can find the show and the archives and articles and the newsletter and the blog. Lots of stuff. Brain Trust members like our good friend John Deaney, who's with us right now. Also, don't forget to check out askjim.biz. That's our knowledge base where you can get small business answers now. John Deaney is all over our websites. He's the president of Management Performance Network. He's the leading TAB boards franchisee in the country, and he'll tell us about that in a few minutes. He's the author of 11 Things You Absolutely Need to Know About Selling Your Business. He's an entrepreneur extraordinaire. John Deaney, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Great.
It's good to have you.
I haven't talked to you in a while. It's a lot of fun.
I know. We've missed you. So how are things in San Antonio?
Good. Good. We are except for residential housing, we're one of the bright spots in the American economy right now.
Yeah, no kidding.
We're doing very well.
So you want to talk about the boomer bust?
Yeah, we were talking about that last time.
Yeah.
The issues of boomers getting ready to retire en masse and selling their small businesses to a younger generation that is A, recruited heavily by corporate because there's fewer of them, and B, not inclined to work 70-hour weeks.
Hmm.
And one surprising thing, I spoke to the Financial Planning Association here last month, and I started out, there were about 40 planners in the room, and I said, how many of you do financial planning for business owners? And with the exception of a couple guys that were large corporate employees, 37 of them raised their hands.
Hmm.
And I said, how many of your business owner clients list 50% or more of their personal assets as being their ownership of their business? The entire group puts their hands.
They all did. Yeah, of course.
I said, how many put 80% or more of their assets in their business?
Almost all of them raised their hands.
75% put their hands up. I said, as you're planning for their retirement, how many of you have done anything to check to see whether the number that they're giving you for their business has any validity? Not a hand went up
in the
room.
Yeah, absolutely.
They all looked at me dumbfounded. I said, well, how do you know? And they said, well, they tell us. I said, well, how do they know? They said, we don't know.
Mm.
So I said, you're planning these people's retirement, and 80% of your assumptions are based on a number that the business owner may have just picked out of the air?
Mm-hmm.
How can you guys responsibly do that? But the more I talk to people, the more it's apparently the common practice in the industry. Well, the business owner knows more than I do. If he says $7 million, it must be $7 million.
Mm-hmm.
And they have no idea.
Well, and these are guys who are supposed to know better, too.
They're supposed to validate, I thought. But, I met with a lady the other day, boomer situation. She's looking for a young person to energize her business and buy it. Wonderful woman. She has had the business for 9 years. She is making, and this, of course, is kind of exceptionally low, she is personally making $15,000 a year out of the business. She's doing about $100,000 gross revenue. This is very
I bet she thinks it's worth $1 million.
She thought $200,000.
Oh, yeah.
And I just sketched out some numbers on a pad for her. I said, how do you expect anybody to pay for it? I mean, you're asking them to take on an investment that has a 15 or 20 year payback before they can take a salary.
Mm-hmm.
And she was astonished. She was like, and she said the same thing. Coincidentally, she said, but I've been planning my retirement around having $200,000 in cash from this business.
Well, here's one of the ways you if you want to get these folks' attention, you certainly know about these things, but say, okay, here's the deal. How much do you want this person who's going to buy? How much do you expect them to live on? You know, what do you expect them to make? And they tell you, okay, you know, maybe this other another person would say $30,000, $50,000, whatever. Okay, let's recast the numbers. Let's pay them that amount of money, and then based on your numbers, let's pay you for the business in payments with whatever's left, and see how many years that takes. Yeah, are you willing to wait that long?
We have a spreadsheet that does that for the sellers, and they get angry at us. A lot of times they send us, which is life. I mean, you know, I'm not one of those brokers that's going to just stick it on the wall at a ridiculous price and let you twist in the wind. If it's not going to sell, I'm going to tell you it's not worth your time and my time to do this. But people get very, very upset when you poke a pin in their retirement balloon all of a sudden.
Well, the magic number is $1 million. I mean, I don't know how many times I've seen a really small business that somebody wanted to sell, and they didn't know how much inventory they had. They never really taken a real inventory. A lot of the inventory they had was obsolete. They did have customers. They might have had customers. They might have had, you know, some revenue. They might have had a couple, $300,000-$400,000 in revenue, but their magic number was always $1 million.
And the
way they came up with that number was because that's what they needed.
Because they've learned that mystical term that they heard somewhere, I have goodwill.
Yeah.
Yeah, that magic mm-hmm. stroke. Goodwill, by the way, I was surprised when I started. The definition of goodwill, the textbook definition is whatever somebody will pay you more than you can document for the assets of the business.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody thinks it's something about how much your customers like you. It actually has nothing to do with that. It's the IRS's term for the unexplained spread.
Well, that's the technical thing. But of course, you know, goodwill also includes maybe a 40-year-old phone number, a 25-year-old address. You know, maybe a customer list that can be validated and verified. I mean, that's all part of goodwill too, obviously.
Actually, not to veer off into the technical aspect of it, but for tax purposes, you're much the IRS will let you put those down. They'll let you put that you paid $10,000 for the 40-year-old phone number, and you're paying $20,000 for trained employees, and you're much better off putting those things down than putting them down to goodwill tax wise.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a heads up.
Yeah. Because you can't amortize those things.
Yes.
Can't you?
Yeah. Goodwill is a long and tough amortization. The intangible assets are better to have booked.
Absolutely. Stand by. Quick break. Right back with our good friend John Deeney. Right after these messages, it's 20 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Stay with us.
To my love, took it down. Climbed a mountain and I turned around. And I saw.
We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. I'm glad you're here. We're visiting with our good friend John Deeney, president of a Management Performance Network. And John, give us that website, please.
Oh, our website is, I'm sorry, I was off listening to Stevie Nicks there.
She has that effect on me, too. Go ahead.
Yeah. Our website is mpninc.com. And the tab part of the website, you can go into directly at tabsanantonio.com.
Tab San Antonio. And tab stands for the alternative board.
Right.
Or tab boards, as it's called. And that's tell us what that is.
That's groups of business owners who get together one morning a month to act as each other's board. We assemble them by size and expertise and experience. And we try to build a board you would build for yourself if you had mm-hmm. the time and the money.
Mm-hmm. But you're each other's board member, aren't you?
Yes, and you come there to work. It's not a networking group. They're mm-hmm. groups of 8 to 10, and you learn each other's business very well with a professional chair, a facilitator that guides you in discovering about each other's business.
Do you ever, what do you do when they're you know, as my audience has heard me say before, John, many times, the problem with humanity is the humans. So inevitably, you're going to have conflicts that come up in these boards, maybe even where, try as you might, as confidential as you try to make it, as high quality and ethical as you try to make it with your the criteria that you use putting these together, somebody is going to violate the confidence, somebody's going to violate the competitive situation. How do you guys deal with that?
You know, I'll tell you the truth, Jim. In 10 years, we now run 14 boards. It hasn't happened. One is that we harp on it all the time.
Yeah.
Secondly is we are absolutely obsessive-compulsive about competitive situations. I mean, if you have a brother who's married to a woman who's in...
Whose neighbor's, you know, in that business.
a similar business, we're not going to do it.
Well, that's good due diligence. I mean, that's the way to do it, is to set it up right to start with.
Yeah. And the third thing is...
Because that's got to be your hallmark. That's your hallmark, isn't it? If it isn't, you're out of business.
Oh, it's absolutely confidential. Last year, in January of 06, I was so proud. At that time, we had 12 boards. 8 of them had a member that was openly discussing the possibility of a merger or acquisition in his or her board. And none of it ever got to the street.
Wow, that's great.
8 different boards.
That takes a lot of confidence for somebody to do that.
It does. But remember, too, that the type of person who is willing to invest 4 hours in thinking and gaining ideas about his business and helping others do the same is in itself a great filter.
Mm-hmm.
Those kind of folks, you know, the kind of folks that are suspicious, you know that you... If you're not ethical, you don't expect anybody else to be ethical.
That's the thing. When you meet somebody who's acting paranoid, it's probably because if they're not ill, it's probably because they're imagining what you doing to them, what they would do to you.
Absolutely, and those people are afraid of a group environment.
Yeah.
So we tend to get a terrific group of people from the get-go, from the first meeting.
So these boomers we've been talking about that are getting close to selling their businesses,
mm-hmm.
is there any hope for them?
It's going to be, you know...
Are you?
You
sound a little dour about their prospects, John.
Well, we'll get into the process quite naturally. Boomers have always been highly competitive. We have always had more people chasing the ring...
Right.
Than there were rings.
Right, because there's so many of us.
Right. And it's going to be the exact same. Those who think they're going to cruise out to retirement and people will be standing online to buy their businesses are going to get hurt.
For one thing, the younger people who are prospects to do that are about half the size of us,
right.
Generation.
Right, the whole...
And they already think the world is all about them.
Well, they do have a different approach and attitude. And don't forget, corporate America is going to be starving for help, too. They're going to be offering them everything.
Right.
So the competition for the people is
so
going
you're,
to be...
You're, so you're, not, you're really not very optimistic about the future of selling your business and cashing out and clipping coupons for the boomer generation of business owners, are you?
I think the people that have a solid business with good cash flow, built on a good base with good employees and good systems, will do just fine.
Mm-hmm.
That is not the majority of small business owners.
Right.
You and I both know that.
Yep.
You know, I read your newsletter every week. I mean, the things you're saying, they must have technology. They must make sure their people are trained and up to date. They must be maintaining their customer relationships. A good, solid business still has and will have people lining up to buy it because there aren't that many of them.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones who are just sitting there on cruise control and have an underperforming business and figure someday when they feel like it, they're going to throw the switch and somebody's going to write out that magic $1 million number for them,
right.
Are going to have a rude awakening.
But but we do have plenty of people listening who are in the Gen X generation.
Mm-hmm.
And for those folks who are listening, there could be some great opportunities out there.
Oh. It's going to be a buyer's market. They're going to have a wonderful time if they want to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah, and the challenge, the trick, and the hat trick, and this is something you guys do for a living, John, is to if you can get the right buyer and the right seller together, there's no reason why it can't be a good deal for everybody.
True.
Yeah.
True.
Hey, John, give us that website again.
We're at Tab San Antonio nationally. If you're interested in a tab board, it's tabboards.com.
Thank you, John, for being here. Good job today, as always.
Thanks a lot, Jim.
See you next time. John Deaney, ladies and gentlemen. He'll be back, I promise. Got to go for this hour. No, I got another half hour. It's not time yet. I'll be right back after these messages. I'm wishing my life away, folks.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.